Well, the right to vote, run for government, have equal pay, access to contraception, these are all things that Australian women are able to do. I just take for granted almost. But for more than, almost equal pay, but for more than 200 million women and girls in developing countries across the world, these things can seem, just like a faraway dream. Earlier this month, international representatives from government and not-for-profit agencies gathered at a summit on family planning in London, and as a result, a landmark $2.6 billion was pledged towards advancing family planning. Now, CEO of the International Women's Development Agency, Joanna Hayter, believes that this result is groundbreaking. How exactly are these funds going to be distributed, and what impact will it have on the countries that are often overlooked? So Joanna Hayter joins me in the studio now. Hello, Joanna.
Hi, Wendy.
The International Women's Development Agency, you're, a remarkable outfit. So tell us a bit about your organisation.
We think we're a remarkable outfit too. IWDA, as we're called, is the only Australian development agency that focuses entirely on women's rights and gender equality. We're a bit over a generation old now, in our 27th year, and the work that we do is work in partnership with women's organisations and other groups within society that are trying to address equality and equity, and we do that in the sense of trying to build fairer and freer and more just nations across our region.
And you don't do the word charity, do you?
No, we don't do the word charity.
Tell us why not.
Well, I think that's just not the premise upon which we work. We work from the premise that women's rights are human rights and human rights are universal, and that that's the starting point for everything that we do, that if we are really serious about balanced economies and a fair share and sustainable development, then obviously we have to do all we can to ensure that the people of every community and every nation are able to participate equally in the decisions that affect both their own family's future but also their nation's future. So we take a rights-based approach to what we do.
A rights-based approach. Now, for instance, tell us about your program in Fiji there, where you've been able to help women or help or be in partnership with women mm-hmm. who are contributing to the new constitution.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a very long-standing partnership between ourselves and three or four of the NGOs in Fiji, predominantly women's organisations with women's leadership. Fiji Women's Rights Movement is one example, and FemLink Pacific is another. These are the sorts of organisations that are out there in the community, bringing women's forums together, deciding what they think the key priorities are for the nation, but also really tackling some of those really big legal barriers, those that we've seen as a result of non-democratic nation status, but also because of the kinds of leadership we see that has excluded women in all spaces, from religious leadership, from economic leadership, from political leadership, for so long. And these are the agencies that are actually taking that on board, looking at new ways to set the agenda and increasing the ability for women and young women in particular to find their voice, to choose the spaces in which they want to stand and be counted, and to try and set that agenda. So it's pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting stuff. I was looking at one of your programs there in Papua New Guinea, was it? It was in Fiji again, I beg your pardon, getting young women on the radio.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's great. That's called Suitcase Radio. It began as a very small sort of community radio initiative and just keeps growing and growing and growing. And what we now have is young journalists, both being trained by the organisation, but then going out and actually programming and broadcasting. That broadcasting is now reaching from local communities into national airwaves and is actually stretching out across the Pacific to new countries. So, and there are asking the questions that matter to them. You know, what do we need as women and girls in our lives? What are we concerned about in terms of our own security or safety? What do we think matters in terms of natural resource management? What do we think about business? What do we think about politics? And it's great. It's been an incredibly dynamic program. Mm. So Suitcase Radio is turning into a large courier service, I think.
Yes. Well, you know, I just love the model that you have. I really do your International Women's Development Agency. It's putting women in leadership and making their voices heard, and then they're able to change their own cultures rather than that kind of fly-in, fly-out model. I love it.
Yeah, that's it.
Now, let's get to this London Summit on Family Planning. That was held earlier this month. It was co-hosted by the British government and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now, it looks like this summit had an extraordinary outcome. Can you tell us all about it?
Look, Wendy, it was. It was tremendously exciting. We thought it was a very significant moment in history. At one point, we were sort of unofficially calling it a golden moment, because this really was a time when the world came together and decided that women in developing countries should have the same access to life-saving contraceptives and services as those in developed countries. So this had been a discussion around family planning and around contraceptive services that had begun many years ago. It began with, you know, what was actually sort of the family planning revolution, and then promises made at conferences 20 years ago in Cairo. But actually, people were just never able to meet those needs. And the reason for that was that people just didn't put the resources and the money and the investment and the political priority to this that it's going to take. So this is a fantastic outcome, and it was championed by brilliant women like Melinda Gates. And what we saw as a result of that summit, which brought, you know, people from all over the world, was that, you know, our starting point was that we knew there was well over 200 million women and girls in developing countries who just weren't in a position to be able to delay or space or avoid pregnancies, just really didn't have the freedom to decide if, when, or how often they'll have children.
And my gosh, isn't that something we take for granted?
Well, it really is. Yeah. And, you know, when you really start to think about what that might mean for you as an individual, it's profound.
Yes,
sure. So these new pledges that we saw from this summit and the kind of political acumen and social acumen that came with that really give us the confidence to think that this unmet need may in fact now be met.
And here we are in the Pacific region, and this is the area that you deal with. So what does it mean for our region?
Well, you know, I think one of the important factors around this summit was the fact that it was in London, and it sort of brought the British government and large American philanthropies together. So the leadership was really sitting in the sort of North Atlantic space. And our concern, whilst being really thrilled about the pledge and the kind of commitment and momentum, we're deeply concerned that the Asia and Pacific regions risk been left out. So we're working very hard to ensure that we work with our government, and I'll talk to you about it a bit more in a minute. But look, this Pacific region is really significant. Over, what would it be? I think it's close to about 60% of the people in the Pacific region are under 25 years old.
Wow.
I know. It's incredible. Imagine if you sort of pictured Australia with that kind of age demographic, how different our society would be. Mm. And then the other thing I think that's of great significance is that one in four girls between 15 and 19 years old, again in the Pacific region, are already mums.
Mm.
So, you know, this is a whole bunch of young girls that are pregnant really, really young. There's all sorts of health risks associated with that. But there's all sorts of life questions associated with that too. What happens when you become a mum at such a young age? How does that impact on your chances to pursue education? What does that do in terms of your opportunities to choose work and life questions? And I think we can play that out.
Yes, and why, what does it actually mean for the development of the country as a whole? whole as well.
That's right.
I just should tell you, everyone, I'm speaking with Joanna Hayter. She's the CEO of the International Women's Development Agency. We should say how we spell your name. H-A-Y-T-E-R. It's a very unlikely name for a person
involved. Yeah, it's a terrible name.
Oh. H-A-Y.
What can you do?
Yes, the figures are that I have in front of me here is that 35% of women on average in the Pacific have access to contraception, and that's 20% lower than the average rate for women in developing countries. So it's even, you know, it's the lowest of the low. There's a quote here I would like to read for and get your response to, Joanna.
Okay.
Dr. Eliza Kennedy from Melbourne's Burnett Institute has researched the region, and she responded to the London summit by saying that, quote, the Pacific tends to be overlooked and may well be overlooked again unless Australia puts up a good case as to why the Pacific deserves special attention. Do you agree with that?
Oh, I wholeheartedly agree with that. You know, I think this is really important analysis. And actually, in Australia, we've formed a consortium between five organisations, ourselves, International Women's Development Agency, Murray Stopes International, CARE, Plan, and Burnett Institute. So we wholeheartedly support their research and share their view about this. You know, Wendy, I think it's really interesting. There's two ways to sort of look at this challenge. One is how challenging the statistics are in relation to age and opportunity and choice and threatening environments in terms of social or cultural barriers. But I think if you turn that around into a positive and look at what happens if you address this issue, we've got some really good analysis now. It's global analysis that shows us that when we invest in family planning, it has a direct impact on the strength of a nation and the sustainability of a nation's development. And so when you start to look at dropping fertility rates, for example, what you see is that pressure's then relieved on a country's health, education, water, sanitation, social services, natural resources, all of those things. And a correlation has been made that shows us that it's estimated, it varies around the world, but it's estimated that about $1 spent on family planning services yields about a $2 to $6 return in terms of cost savings in sub-Saharan Africa. When you look at that same situation in South Asia, it's a $1 to $13 return. And when you look at it in the Pacific, it's about $1 to a $41 return.
How about that? Wow.
It is really significant. So this one step can make a huge difference to the security, sustainability and equity of the region.
And, of course, women's lives, as you say. Well, thank you so much for that, Joanna. So your next step is to, who are you going to lean on? You've got this little triumvirate of operatives there to put your case. So who do you go and put your case to?
Well, we're going to be working with the Australian government. I mean, we think it's just really important that that together we can be a source of what works. And I think the important thing at this point is, yes, we're going to address contraceptive services. We're going to make sure that women are getting contraceptives when they want them, when they need them. We're going to be addressing safe abortion services or management of abortion complications. There's a whole range of health interventions and service delivery. But when it goes way beyond just service delivery, you know, ultimately enabling women and young people, you know, to make sexual and reproductive health choices has to be done in a space that doesn't involve coercion or discrimination or violence. So we can't just talk health delivery here. We've got to talk about laws and policies that see women in early marriage or forced marriage. We've got to tackle the discrimination in relation to disability or HIV. We've got to amend the kinds of laws that require husband's consent for women to use contraceptives, or we've got to address all of that law and policy space.
Wow.
And we've got to address, well, we've got to address sexuality education as well, because we've got to change all these gender norms that says, you know, men's behaviour X, Y is acceptable and women's behaviour X, Y is what we expect to see. Who's deciding those boundaries? Who's deciding those behaviours? And we have to talk about that with these young kids, because if we don't work with this next generation now, these patterns, norms, laws, policies, behaviours are all going to lock in again for another generation.
Yep. I hear what you're saying. Wow.
Yeah.
You've got a big job ahead of you, Joanna Hayter with a Y. Joanna is a CEO. You have to call yourself that now.
I like the Y. Yes, it's more of a question than a letter.
Yes, exactly. Joanna is the CEO of the International Women's Development Agency, and all power to you. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Wendy.
You're with Life Matters here on RN with Wendy Harmer just for this this end of this week, actually. Then Natasha will be back. So stay with me. And coming up next, what does community really mean?